Okay, we're going to be in 2 Kings tonight, chapter 5. What we were looking at was how these prophets raised other people up and taught them to be prophets. So it doesn't say that Gehazi was being trained up to be a prophet, but he certainly was a faithful servant to Elisha. Elisha gave him responsibility. And do you know where 2 Kings is, sweetie?
2 Kings, I found it, but what chapter and verse?
5.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to start in the 2 Kings 5. So we saw Gehazi and God. Elisha sent him with his staff to lay it on the boy's body to see if he would be healed. And then it didn't work. And then eventually Elisha got there and he healed him. And then we saw that there were prophets, sons of the prophets, in different places in Bethel and Jericho and Gilgal and those places. So we're going to pick it up in chapter 5 of 2 Kings. And this is another record with Elijah and Gehazi. Now Naaman, verse 1, captain of the host of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master and honorable, because by him the Lord had given deliverance unto Syria. He was also a mighty man in valor, but he was a leper. It's a terrible, horrible disease, and especially in those days. To some degree today, they can treat it with antibiotics, but back then there was no hope. And lepers were basically outcasts. They were, you know, most societies, they just were kicked out. But in this case, this guy was a great general. And so they gave him a pass, I guess. And he was the general of the army of Syria. In verse 2, it says, "And the Syrians had gone out by companies and had brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid, and she waited on Naaman's wife. And she said unto her mistress, 'Would God, my lord, were with the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy.' And one went in and told his lord, saying, 'Thus and thus said the maid that is in the land of Israel.' And the king of Syria said, 'Go, and I will send a letter unto the king of Israel.' And he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver and 6,000 pieces of gold and 10 changes of raiment." That's a lot of moolah. That's a lot of money. You know, I don't know how big the pieces of gold are, but I think right now gold is $4,000 an ounce.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Mine says 150
pounds. 150
pounds?
Well, 16 pounds, 16 ounces to a pound. And then silver's up to $65 an ounce. So that's a lot. Then 10 changes of raiment. And I don't think it was just sweatpants and
t-shirts.
Yeah, it was fancy stuff. And he brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, "Now, when this letter is come unto thee, behold, I have therewith sent Naaman, my servant, to thee, that thou mayest recover him of his leprosy." Well, the little girl didn't say, "Go to the king of Israel," did she?
No.
She said, "Go to the prophet." But he went to the king of Israel. And it came to pass, when the king of Israel had read the letter, that he rent his clothes and said, "Am I God to kill and to make alive, that this man doth send unto me to recover a man of his leprosy? Wherefore consider, I pray you, and see how he seeketh a quarrel against me." Okay, when it says he rent his clothes, that means he ripped them, right? He tore his clothes to show that he's upset. You know, he's not happy with the whole situation. He's concerned. He thinks that the king of Syria is picking a fight with him. He said, "What do you think? I can't heal this guy." And it was so when Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had rent his clothes, that he sent to the king, saying, "Wherefore hast thou rent thy clothes? Let him come now to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel. You know, that's an important statement. There were lots of prophets. There were lots of false prophets running around. It was a pretty good business. You know, if you could fake being a prophet, you could make some bucks. And there were all kinds of people out there. Elijah's predecessor, Elijah, remember, killed 350 prophets of Baal. So there were lots of prophets, but he said that there is a prophet, meaning a real prophet, a true prophet in Israel. So Naaman came with his horses, with his chariot, and stood at the door of the house of Elisha. When it says he came with his horses, it means he came with his army. Came with, you know, he didn't travel alone or just with one or two servants. He came with an army. And he comes to the door of the house of Elisha. And Elisha sent a messenger unto him. Elisha doesn't even come out. He sends a servant out. He sends a little old guy. He sends him out, saying, "Go and wash in the Jordan seven times." That's the river Jordan. "And thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean." That's a pretty simple request, right? Mm-hmm. Pretty simple request. Go to the river Jordan, wash seven times, and you'll be clean. But Naaman was wroth. He was upset. He was angry. He was unhappy. And he went away and said, "Behold, I thought he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and strike his hand over the place and recover the leper." He thought he was going to have a Hollywood deliverance. You know, the prophet was going to come out, he's going to wave his hand, and the thunder and lightning would strike and he would be healed. Instead, he didn't even come out. He just sent a little messenger out, a little servant. And he goes on, Naaman goes on, "Are not Arbana and Pharpar, rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? May I not wash in them and be clean?" So he turned and went away in a rage. He was really upset. And his servants came near and spake unto him and said, "My father, if the prophet had bid thee to do some great thing, wouldst thou not have done it?" You know, if he told you to go slay a dragon or a lion barehanded, would you have done it? Would you have not done it? "How much rather then, when he saith to thee, wash and be clean?" How much easier is it to just, you know, wash and be clean? You don't have to do some great deed. You don't have to do some great miracle. You didn't have to fight an army. You know, in mythology, if you go back to ancient mythology, a lot of times that's what was required when people needed stuff. They go to the gods for something, and the god would say, "Well, you have to go do this, and you have to do that, and you have to slay the dragon, and you have to kill the whatever it is, the guy with one eye,
Cyclops.
The Cyclops, yeah." Or things like that, you know, that was Greek mythology, ancient mythology. But here, they said, you know, if he'd asked you to do some great thing, wouldn't you have done it? And he said, "Just go wash and be clean." How about that? So it struck a note with Naaman. He thought about it, made sense. Then he went down, dipped himself seven times in the Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God, and his flesh came again like unto the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. And it says it like that because when you have leprosy, your skin rots right on your body. You know, it's pretty disgusting. You're unclean. And so when he came back clean, his skin was perfect, beautiful, like a little baby's. Isn't that great? And he returned, Naaman returned to the man of God, he and all his company, and came and stood before him. And he said, "Behold, now I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. Now, therefore, I pray thee, take a blessing of thy servant." He said, "Now I know truly the real God is in Israel. I want to bless you. I want to give you a gift. But he said, Elisha, as the Lord liveth, before whom I stand, I will receive none. And he urged him to take it, but he refused. So Naaman kept saying, well, come on, I got to give you something. I got to show my gratitude. I want to show you how thankful I am. And Elisha said, no, I can't take anything from you. Because God told him what? Don't take anything. Just like back in Genesis, when Abraham conquered those three kings and recovered his nephew Lot, and then the king of Salem, not the king of Salem, king of Sodom, I guess, said, you know, we want to reward you. And he said, no, I can't take it from you, because then you'll say you made me rich. So now verse 17 is a strange one. And Naaman said, shall there not then, I pray thee, be given to thy servant 2 mules burden of earth? For thy servant will henceforth neither offer burnt offering nor sacrifice unto the god, other gods, but unto the Lord. So I looked at that and I said, I don't understand that. And I looked in a couple of different versions and they didn't really make a lot of sense either. The NIV says, Naaman speaking, if you will not, meaning if you will not receive my gift, said Naaman, please let me, your servant, be given as much earth as a pair of mules can carry, for your servant will never again make burnt offerings and sacrifices to any other god but the Lord. Well, what does that mean? Well, it really means this. It's according to Bishop K.C. Pillay, who was from India, and he taught a lot about Oriental customs and things. This has to do with the earth, not the mules. It's about, he wanted two things or sacks or whatever of dirt that 2 mules could carry, that much dirt. And he was going to take it back with him to his home, and wherever he would worship and pray to God, he would spread that dirt out on the floor. And then every time he went in to pray, he would remember what God did for him. It was a memorial, and he would remember that man of God that came out and ministered to him. So that's what that's all about. Kind of strange, huh? Mm-hmm. But I thought it was interesting. And apparently in the East, they will do that sometimes. They'll take dirt from a temple area and take it home and spread it on their floor where they would pray, so that they think it's holy ground or holy dirt. So anyway, verse 18, in this thing the Lord pardon thy servant, that when my master goeth to the house of Rimmon, that's a false god, to worship there, he leaneth on my hand, and I bow myself in the house of Rimmon. When I bow down myself in the house of Rimmon, the Lord pardon thy servant in this thing. He's saying, you know, I'm going to take this dirt back, and I'm going to remember always that the true God delivered me from the leprosy, and I'm going to remember you, Elisha, for doing it. But when I'm with the king, I have to obey him, and he requires me to go in to worship the false God. So I will bow down, but not with my heart. No, I'm not giving him my heart. My heart is to God. And so Elisha said to him, go in peace. So he departed from him a little way. So that's pretty great. He says, go in peace, which means Elijah's saying, well, all is well then. You're good. God's good with you. He accepts that. He understands your situation, but he knows your heart. So that's pretty great. So now we go on, verse 20. But Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said, behold, my master hath spared Naaman the Syrian, in not receiving at his hands that which he brought. But as the Lord liveth, I will run after him and take somewhat of him. Okay, Gehazi, remember, has been with Elisha for many years already, for a long time. And he was there when Elisha raised the Shunammite woman's son from the dead. He sees Naaman healed of leprosy. And he sees how Elisha walks with God, how his words carry the power of God, and he has been with him. But he sees the situation, he says, man, Elijah let him off light. I'm going to go and get a little piece of the action here. So, Gehazi, verse 21, followed after Naaman. And when Naaman saw him running after him, he lighted down from his chariot to meet him and said, is all well? And he said, all is well. My master has sent me, saying, behold, even now there be come to me from Mount Ephraim two young men of the sons of the prophets. Give them, I pray thee, a talent of silver and two changes of garments. So he made up a story, didn't he? He lied. You know, and he brings in the sons of the prophets. I don't know that Naaman knew much about the sons of the prophets, but anyway. And Naaman said, be content with take two. And he urged him and bound two talents of silver in two bags with two changes of garments and laid them upon two of his servants, and they bare them before him. And when he came to the tower, he took them from their hand and bestowed them in the house and let the men go, and they departed. But when he went in and stood before his master, and Elisha said unto him, whence comest thou, Gehazi? Where you been, Gehazi? What you been doing? And he said, thy servant went no whither. You know, I didn't go anywhere. I've just been hanging around outside. And he said unto him, Elijah said unto Gehazi, went not mine heart with thee when the man turned again from his chariot to meet thee? Is it a time to receive money and to receive garments and olive yards and vineyards and sheep and oxen and men servants and maid servants? The leprosy therefore of Naaman shall cleave unto thee and unto thy seed for
ever.
Wow. And he went out from his presence as a leper, as white as snow. That's terrible. You know, God in verse 26, he said unto him, went not mine heart with thee when the man turned again from his... God showed Elisha in a vision. He gave him a picture in his mind of what was happening. Exactly. We can lie to each other, but you can't hide from God. No matter what you do, he knows. So here, Gehazi. Now, we don't know if Gehazi was, you know, considered one of the sons of the prophets. Was he interning with Elisha or what? But he was with him for years and years. He was trusted. He trusted him. And up to this point, he had been a safe, faithful servant. But at this point, he disobeys God and he lies to Elijah, which means he's lying to God. And he got his just due. He got what he deserved. So it's kind of strange. He saw all that Elijah did. He raised somebody from the dead. He healed this guy from his leprosy. He saw the faithfulness of Elijah. He saw how God prospered him and took care of him and provided for him and protected him. And yet at this one point in time, he had a moment of weakness and it messed up his life. Sad.
Him and his family.
Yeah. Him and his family forever. So whatever.
Gehazi, day has leper somewhere.
Probably if they continued on, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we see that Gehazi, whatever his status was, whether he was a servant or a trainee of Elisha, he was finished and he was a leper and his progeny forever. So what a sad story, really. So, you know, even though these guys were picked by the prophets or they volunteered or whatever and got accepted into the whatever it was they did, they weren't all perfect. And if they screwed up, they were, you know, kicked out. Chapter 6. The sons of the prophets said unto Elisha. So now here's the sons of the prophets again, these guys. And we see these guys lots of different places. But it says, the sons of the prophets said unto Elisha, behold, now the place where we dwell with thee is too straight for us. So apparently they lived with Elisha. Mm-hmm. And it was too small. They said, let us go, we pray thee, unto Jordan, and take thence every man a beam, and let us make us a place there where we may dwell. And he answered, go ye. And one said, be content, I pray thee, and go with thy servants. And he answered, I'll go. So he went with them, and they came to Jordan, and they cut down wood. But as one was felling the beam, the axe head fell into the water. And he cried and said, alas, master, for it was borrowed. And the man of God said, where fell it? And he showed him the place, and he cut down a stick and cast it thither, and the iron did swim. Now, that just simply means he cut down, like, you know, a long, skinny branch, and he stuck it in, and he found it, and he lifted it out of the water. But, you know, he found it. It's still a miracle, because he didn't know exactly where it was. He couldn't see into the water. And so the iron did swim, and therefore said he, take it up to thee. He put it out of his hand and took it. So that's, you know, but here we see that these guys lived with Elijah. And it's pretty great. Let's see, we're going to go to chapter 8. That's the next place we see something that pertains to this. In chapter 8, verse 1. Then spake Elisha unto the woman, whose son he had restored to life, saying, arise, and go thou and thine household. Time out. We have a technical difficulty here.
Sorry. Coffee break.
Okay. Chapter 8, verse 1. Okay, this is about Elijah, and he's talking to the Shunammite woman, that which we read about in chapter 4, who took care of Elijah and Gehazi and built a room for him to stay in and fed him when they came by. And then he said she would have a son because she did not have any children. And then when the child grew older and was in the field with his father, he got sick, and she ran and got him, and he came and raised him from the dead. So then spake Elisha unto the woman whose son he had restored to life, saying, arise, and go thou and thy family, and sojourn wheresoever thou canst sojourn, for the Lord hath called for a famine, and it shall also come upon the land 7 years. Okay. He has been with this lady for a long, long time, and has a continuing relationship. If you remember in chapter 4, you weren't here, but in chapter 4, he would travel by, and she realized that he was a man of God, and she fed him. Then she built onto the house. Her husband was agreeable to it. They built him a special room that he could stay overnight, and he had a bed and a lamp and a chair and all this stuff. And then a year later, she had a child. And then that child grew up, and he was weaned, and he was old enough to go out and work in the fields. So that's another, who knows, 7, 8 years, 9 years. And then all the other stuff ensued later on. And then here we are now, and he says, there's going to be a famine. So after all these years, he's connected to this woman, and I guess her husband must have died. And he says, you need to go somewhere else because there's going to be a famine here. And it's going to be 7 years long. And the woman arose and did after the saying of the man of God. And she went with her household and sojourned in the land of the Philistines 7 years. And it came to pass at the 7 years' end that the woman returned out of the land of the Philistines. And she went forth to cry unto the king for her house and for her land. And the king talked with Gehazi, the servant of the man of God, saying, tell me, I pray thee, all the great things that Elijah hath done. So here's this Gehazi. Years later, It's not just a few years now, but it's years later, right? It's at least 7 or 8 years later. Now, when she comes and she says she went to cry for her house and her land, because in Israel, each tribe got their own section of land. And each family got their own, you know, like farm. And they could not lose it. If they were in debt, they could sell it, but if they got the money again, they could always redeem it back. Yeah. They could always get it back. It was never permanently taken from them in God's eyes. So she's going to the king because somebody had moved in and taken her land. And so she's saying, okay, well, this is our land, you know, according to the law of Moses, it's ours. Meanwhile, the king is talking to Gehazi, and he's getting all the info on Elisha and all the great things he did. And it came to pass as he was telling the king how he had restored a dead body to life, that behold, the woman whose son he had restored to life cried to the king for her house and for her land. And Gehazi said, my lord, O king, this is the woman. What a coincidence. Not a coincidence at all. And this is her son, whom Elisha restored to life. When the king asked the woman, she told him, so the king appointed unto her a certain officer, saying, restore all that was hers and all the fruits of the field since the day that she left the land, even until now. So she got her land back, plus she got all the back rent that was due her. So that's really all that story is, but here's Gehazi, he's still a leper, but he's still around and he's telling about Elisha and what he did. That's how much of an impact he had. Let's go to chapter 9. And Elisha the prophet called one of the children of the prophets. The word children should read sons. Okay? It says in the ESV, right? What do you got there, Bill?
Sons.
Yeah. What Bible do you have?
Holman.
Oh, I know that. What version, though? It's not a King James.
No.
Anyway, okay, it's sons. Bill has got a different version that says sons. So.
Holman Christian Standard Bible.
Okay, it's a standard, probably American standard. And Elisha the prophet called one of the children or the sons of the prophets and said unto him, gird up thy loins and take this box of oil in thy hand and go to Ramoth Gilead. So it's one of those guys that dwelled with him. Remember, they built a new house because it was too small. And this is a prophet in training. And he calls this guy, and he must have been pretty faithful and reliable. He must have trusted him because he's given him a job. And he says, and when thou comest thither, look out there Jehu, the son of Jehoshaphat, the son of Nimshi, and go in and make him arise up from among his brethren and carry him to an inner chamber. So he says, when you get here, find Jehu, this Jehu guy, son of Jehoshaphat, the son of Nimshi. And when you find him, take him out of he's hanging out with some other guys, and take him and go out by yourself with him. Then take the box of oil and pour it on his head and say, thus saith the Lord, I have anointed thee king over Israel. Then open the door and flee and tarry not. You know, do that and then get the hell out of there as quick as you can. How great is that? Just don't hang around. Just beat feet. Go. So the young man, even the young man, the prophet, he's a prophet. He's the sons of the prophet, and he's a prophet, went to Ramoth Gilead, and we don't ever know his name. But to God, he's a prophet. And when he came, behold, the captain of the host was sitting, and he said, I have an errand to thee, O captain. And Jehu said, unto which of all us? And he said, to thee, O captain. And he arose and went into the house, and he poured the oil on his head and said unto him, thus saith the Lord God of Israel, I have anointed thee king over the people of the Lord, even over Israel. And thou shalt smite the house of Ahab, thy master, that I may avenge the blood of my servants, the prophets, and the blood of all the servants of the Lord at the hand of Jezebel. For the whole house of Ahab shall perish, and I will cut off from Ahab him that pisseth against the wall, and him that is shut up and left in Israel. That means all the males, right? He's cutting off the bloodline. He's saying, you know, that's it. There's not going to be any more males in the house of Ahab, and they're going to die off, and that whole family is going to be done. And I will make the house of Ahab like the house of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, like the house of Baasha, the son of Ahijah. And the dog shall eat Jezebel in the portion of Jezreel, and there shall be none to bury her. And he opened the door and fled. He did exactly what he was told. He's one of the sons of the prophets. He had been trained by Elisha, and he did exactly. He obeyed. He did what he was told. And if we read the rest of the chapter, all that he prophesied came to pass. Those guys died, and Jezebel died, and there was nothing left of her to be buried, which is, you know, terrible. Okay, let's go to chapter 17. She was. She was an evil woman. They wrote a song about her.
Made a movie, too.
Yeah. Okay, chapter 13, verse 13. 17, verse 13. 2 Kings 17, verse 13. Yet the Lord testified against Israel and against Judah by all the prophets and by all the seers, saying, turn ye from your evil ways and keep my commandment and my statutes according to all the law which I commanded your fathers, which I sent to you by my servants, the prophets. So here, this just tells us, you know, there are certain prophets that are named, and God gives us the record of their actions, their words, their doings. Some of them wrote down scripture as they were appointed by God. But there were many prophets in Israel, and they were God's servants. Notwithstanding, they would not hear, but hardened their necks like the neck of their fathers, and they did not believe in the Lord their God. Well, the reason that God sent the prophets was because they didn't believe, and he's trying to get them to believe. So it seems that for a long period of time, there were many prophets in Israel and Judah. We saw the sons of the prophets, these groups. We saw way back in Samuel, when Saul got anointed king and he received Holy Spirit, that he met a band of prophets and prophesied with them. We saw that there were the sons of the prophets, different groups in different cities. We saw when Ahab went after Elijah that he met Obadiah, and he said he had hidden 100 prophets, 50 by 50, in two different caves and fed them and kept them alive. So there were lots of prophets, but over the time, it seemed like there were less and less. Prophecy and being a prophet, or false or otherwise, became a profession and a job, and the true prophets, the men of God, became less and less. Let's go to Jeremiah 23. Now we're going to Jeremiah. Jeremiah 23. No, we're not going back to Kings.
23, you
said 23. It says, woe be unto the pastors that destroy... You there? Jeremiah 23. Verse 1, woe be unto the pastors that destroy and scatter the sheep of my pasture, saith the Lord. The word pastors is shepherds, right? Therefore, thus saith the Lord God of Israel against the pastors that feed my people. You have scattered my flock, you have driven them away, and have not visited them. Behold, I will visit upon you the evil of your doings, saith the Lord. So here in Jeremiah, this is a prophet, Jeremiah, and he's speaking to these people who were supposed to be men of God, whether they were priests or Levites or other prophets, supposedly, and they weren't doing their jobs. And so Jeremiah speaks out against them. He says, whoa, what are you guys doing? You're leading my people astray, because they weren't keeping them on the word. They were turning them away. Let's go to chapter 33. Let's start in verse 19. The word of the Lord came unto Jeremiah, saying, thus saith the Lord, if ye can break my covenant of the day and my covenant of the night, that there should not be day and night in their season, then may also my covenant be broken with David my servant, that he should not have a son to reign upon his throne, and with the Levites and priests, my ministers. So here they were his ministers, and they just weren't doing the job. You know, they were screwing it up. Let's go to Isaiah. So we saw along the way that they had these schools of the prophets and these people, but eventually we don't know what happened to it. There were certainly different groups of people that banded together and form groups to train people, but they weren't always godly, like the Pharisees. You know, they started out in the Babylonian captivity as a reform group, trying to reform Israel, but they really didn't walk with God. The real prophets like Daniel and some of the other guys, they didn't follow. Isaiah 28. Verse 7, it says, but they also have erred through wine and through strong drink and through, they have also erred through wine and through strong drink are out of the way. The priest and the prophet have erred through strong drink. They are swallowed up of wine. They are out of the way through strong drink. They err in vision. They stumble in judgment. So what were these guys doing? They were partying. They were drinking. They were doing anything but what they were supposed to do. Verse 8, for all the tables are full of vomit and filthiness, so that there is no place clean. Whom shall he teach knowledge? And whom shall he make to understand doctrine? Them that are weaned from the milk and are drawn from the breasts. For precept must be upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little and there a little. For with stammering lips and another tongue will he speak to this people, to whom he said, this is the rest wherewith ye may cause the weary to rest, and this is the refreshing, yet they would not hear. The word of God was unto them precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little and there a little, that they might go and fall backward and be broken and snared and taken. Wherefore, hear the word of the Lord, ye scornful men that rule this people, which is in Jerusalem. Who's he talking to? He's talking to the prophets and the priests and the Levites and the people that are supposed to be teaching and be an example to the people. He said, they're scornful because ye have said, we have made a covenant with death and with hell are we at agreement. When the overflowing scourge shall pass through, it shall not come unto us, for we have made lies our refuge, and under falsehood have we hid ourselves. And it goes on from there. Pretty wild. Priest and prophet were corrupted. Let's go to Hosea. Hosea, chapter 9. Hosea chapter 9. Yeah, it's probably the cleanest part of your Bible.
I'm following everything.
I know, you're doing good.
Yeah. Oh, here is Daniel. We found Daniel.
Yeah, so it's right after Daniel. Daniel, Hosea.
I just can't put the pages with my fingers not
sticking. In chapter 9.
It's this India paper.
It sure is, Bill. Okay.
Cool. What
no,
chapter?
No, nine. Spanish.
Yeah.
What chapter?
Nine.
Cool. We got it. Thanks.
Nueve, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's about as much Spanish as I know.
That was good.
Okay. And verse siete. 9:7.
Okay.
The days of visitation are come, the days of recompense are come. Israel shall know it, the prophet is a fool. The spiritual man is mad for the multitude of thine iniquity and the great hatred. The watchman of Ephraim was with my God, but the prophet is a snare of a fowler in all his ways and hatred in the house of his God. They have deeply corrupted themselves as in the day of Gibeah. Therefore he will remember their iniquity. He will visit their sins. So here again, the prophets had been walking away from God. They weren't no longer true prophets. Hosea was, but some of these other guys were not. And then we're going to go to Micah. So you got Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Amos, Micah, chapter 3. Micah. That's it?
Three.
Micah chapter 5,
all right.
Chapter 3, verse 5.
Wait a minute.
You ready?
No.
Did you find it? Okay.
She did. Your wife has not.
My wife did not. You got it now?
I have.
Okay.
It's so small.
Well, it is. Thus saith the Lord concerning the prophets that make people err. Chapter 3 of Micah, verse 5.
Sorry, I didn't hear the five part.
Said it four times. Okay. Thus saith the Lord concerning the prophets that make the people err. Prophets were not supposed to make the people err. They're supposed to teach them the truth. Get them back to what's right, not make them err. That bite with their teeth and cry peace, and he that putteth not into their mouths, they even prepare war against him. Therefore night shall be unto you, that ye shall not have a vision, and it shall be dark unto you, that ye shall not divine, and the sun shall go down over the prophets, and the day shall be dark over them. They're not going to get any revelation from God. He's not going to open up their minds and show them what he thinks. Then shall the seers be ashamed. Seers is another term for a prophet. And the diviners confounded. Another term for prophets or a spiritual man. Yea, they shall all cover their lips, for there is no answer of God. You know, he's not going to give them any answers. He's not going to keep his word with them. He's not. You know, remember when he said about I think he said it about Samuel, but he said it about several guys. He never let their words fall, right? He never let them fail. When they spoke, God backed them up. He never let their words fail. when they said something was going to come to pass, it came to pass. But these guys, God said they were leading people astray, so he wasn't going to do that. He wasn't going to give them any more light. So where once there were bands of prophets and schools for prophets, by the time of the latter prophets, there are but a few true prophets. But by the time of Malachi, the priests were corrupted. Two groups responsible for teaching and leading God's people, the priests and the prophets or the Levites, turned their backs on God and his word.
It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, and so let's go to chapter 1 of Malachi, the last book of the Old Testament. That's it.
Right before Matthew.
It's the last book of the Old Testament. Now, obviously this is after they came back from the...
What chapter?
Chapter 1 of Malachi. Okay. And we're going to start in verse 6. Now, this is after the Babylonian captivity. They came back from Babylon. They rebuilt the temple. They rebuilt the walls. Ezra and Nehemiah had tried to straighten everything out. But then after a few years, they went down the wrong path again. And so God sends Malachi. He says in verse 6, "A son honoreth his father, and a servant his master. If I then be a father, where is mine honor? And if I be a master, where is my fear or respect? Saith the Lord of hosts unto you, O priests that despise my name, and ye say, wherein have we despised thy name? Well, you offer polluted bread upon my altar. And you say, wherein have we polluted thee? In that you say, the table of the Lord is contemptible. And if you offer the blind for sacrifice, is it not evil? And if you offer the lame and the sick, is it not evil?" Remember in the Old Testament, if you go back to Exodus, the end of Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers, and you read the law or go into Deuteronomy, when they did sacrifices, the animals were supposed to be perfect and pure. They were not to have any disease. They were not to have any injuries. They were not to have any impurities. But he said, you know, if you offer the lame and the blind, and is that not evil? Offer it now unto thy governor. Will he be pleased with thee or accept thy person, saith the Lord of hosts? If you went to the governor or the king and you offered him a gift and he gave him a blind horse, what would he say to you? "And now I pray you, beseech God that he will be gracious unto us. This has been by your means. Will he regard your person, saith the Lord of hosts? Who is there even among you that would shut the doors for naught? Neither do ye kindle fire on mine altar for naught. I have no pleasure in you, saith the Lord of hosts, neither will I accept an offering at your hand. For from the rising of the sun even to the going down of the same, my name shall be great among the Gentiles. And in every place incense shall be offered unto my name, and a pure offering. For my name shall be great among the heathen, saith the Lord of hosts." What's he saying? He invested these hundreds and thousands of years in Israel, and now he's saying, you guys blew it, and now the Gentiles are going to honor me. "But ye have profaned it, in that ye say, the table of the Lord is polluted, and the fruit thereof, even his meat, is contemptible. Ye said also, behold, what a weariness is it, and ye have snuffed at it, saith the Lord of hosts." You know, you're getting tired of doing this? "And he brought that which was torn and lame and sick. Thus ye brought an offering. Should I accept this of your hand, saith the Lord?" You brought me junk. Should I accept this? He's really challenging them here. "But cursed be the deceiver, which hath in his flock a male, and voweth and sacrifice unto the Lord a corrupt thing. For I am a great king, saith the Lord of hosts, and my name is dreadful among the heathen." or awesome. And now, chapter 2, verse 1. And now, O ye priests, this commandment is for you. If you will not hear, and if you will not lay it to heart, to give glory unto my name, saith the Lord of hosts, I will even send a curse upon you, and I will curse your blessings. Yea, I have cursed them already, because ye do not lay it to heart. Behold, I will corrupt your seed, and spread dung on your faces, even the dung of your solemn feasts. And one shall take you away with it. And ye shall know that I have sent this commandment unto you, that my covenant might be with Levi, saith the Lord of hosts. My covenant was with him of life and peace. I gave them to him for fear, for the fear wherewith he feared me and was afraid before my name. In other words, Levi gave God great respect. He was in awe of God. The law of truth was in his mouth, and iniquity was not found in his lips. He walked with me in peace and equity, and did turn many away from iniquity. For the priest's lips should keep knowledge, and they should seek the law at his mouth, for he is a messenger of the Lord of hosts. What a cool verse that is. We're going to read that again. A priest or a minister or a man of God, his lips should keep knowledge, and they should seek the law at his mouth, for he is the messenger of the Lord of hosts. It's pretty simple. But ye are departed out of the way. Ye have caused many to stumble at the law. Ye have corrupted the covenant of Levi, saith the Lord of hosts. So that's what happened. So once where there were many great prophets and men of God, by the time of Malachi, they had all had gone away. And Malachi was the last great prophet of the Old Testament. And he stood up against these priests and Levites that were corrupted. And there were no other prophets left. No other men of God left. And then after he died, we have a period of 300, 350 years of darkness until the time of Christ. So that's where we're going to stop tonight. And obviously, now we're going to look at Jesus Christ and how he trained up his apostles. Woohoo! So that's what we'll do next week.